Welcome, everybody, to Cairo Nights. This is your producer, Sugar Shane Peterson, sitting here behind the board, and we have the best of Cairo Nights for you here tonight. Now, this is a request from Jack. This is from yesterday when him and Hannah Scott sat down and talked about, you know, some of these vaccine mandates. Enjoy.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. On the line currently is the one and only Hannah Scott. Hannah Scott, should I have turned on my my camera so that you can see my big, beautiful face? Because I am would imagine that you would want to see my wonderfully handsome good looks before we begin this segment.
I can use my imagination.
All right, Anna Scott. So I wanted to have you come back on so we could go through all the fine details. We got all the numbers of the amount of people who actually left their jobs, were let go from their jobs. There's a lot of stuff going around. Something about Seattle City Light. I've got stuff about Ed Troyer, which is kind of not related. I've got stuff all over the map, Anna Scott. So
same.
What have you got for us this evening?
So we can start off with the numbers that I know about as far as the vaccination deadline goes. The first thing that I heard this morning was from the State Patrol. 127 of their staff have left rather than have to get vaccinated. That includes 67 troopers, six sergeants, and one captain who are now off the job. I talked to their public information officer this morning, and they're, you know, it's fewer than they had expected to leave, but it's a bit heartbreaking. I asked, you know, what's the kind of experience level? How long have these folks been there? Are they newer? Are they, you know, longtime people? And it's a mixed bag. They had a cadet who left rather than get vaccinated, all the way up to guys who'd been there more than 20 years. So a big blow for them. They're going to have to adjust for services, but they said they'll move some people around and they think they can handle it, but they'll have to recruit to replace those guys.
Hannah, I got a weird theory because I was listening to this morning on the Gian Ursula show, and something kind of hit me because I thought, why Washington State Patrol and why not Seattle PD? Why not anywhere else, right? Because this seems to be kind of like an outlier compared to other people who work for either the county, city, state at any different level. And I think, and this is my running theory, I think within the Washington State Patrol, that it might have been almost like a seed had been planted or incepted a while back that there was going to be uniformity or a united front from everybody who works for WSP. And so this is why we see a higher number compared to other departments. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think, though, that you have to remember there's more people working at the State Patrol, I think, than what we have at, say, the City of Seattle Police Department.
Right, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Actually, you know what? That's not that many. It's 2,200 people who work there. And I think we're right around that number at the SPD. So it's not. It's so you might be right, I think.
Yeah, because it just seems like such an outlier compared to all the other numbers that we see and all the other figures that we see. And, you know, just in reading about it, the sense that I got was maybe there was this idea of we're going to all kind of stick together to the best of our ability. Now, I'm not saying WSP as a whole, but I'm saying within this cadre of people, within this small group of guys, I think that maybe that's what they were going for. And also, I mean, when we look at something like we had Tim Robinson on yesterday from Seattle Public Schools, there was a pretty uniform decision, or at least what it looks like from their numbers, like 99% reporting, right? I mean, that's a very high compliance rate. And it's much more than what people thought was going to be across the board. I felt like we were kind of charged up to have this idea that it was going to be thousands of people who weren't going to be in compliance, and outside of these few instances, it seems like for the most part everybody's within compliance. So what else have you got for us, Anna Scott?
So I have the latest numbers from the City of Seattle, which is, you know, they were pretty close to yesterday anyway. This is kind of drills down a bit more specifically. Again, citywide, we've got 99% of their 11,250 employees that have complied. And again, complied means they've turned in some form of paperwork, whether that's proof of vaccination or their exemption requests. But it still breaks down to not that much as far as exemptions. So 94.5% of people are vaccinated and 5% exemptions. So total citywide, you've got 520 people who have asked for their exemptions. I don't get clarity as to whether those exemptions have been granted or not. And total 97 staff members at the city have not submitted anything, but it's a really low number for Seattle Fire and Seattle Police. Seattle Fire says only 11 individuals did not submit their paperwork. They've got like 93% of people who are vaccinated. The majority of those who did not submit paperwork are firefighters, though. And then SPD, I think yesterday I had a couple of dozen who hadn't turned in their paperwork. It's down to seven, just seven people.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I was listening to other pundits this morning as I go on my runs, Hannah. You know, I like to listen to different shows and different. So I'll take in G and Ursula. I might take in a couple of different podcasts. And what I heard from many right wing pundits out there is they were saying the city of Seattle has lost hundreds of officers. And what they were doing is that they were combining the loss of officers over the last 18 months to 2 years with this number, which was confusing to me. I don't want to name drop anybody for making a huge mistake on a nationally a podcast that goes out to tens of millions of people every single day. But this individual was saying, well, the city, which is true, the city of Seattle needs more police officers, but then also combining it with hundreds of officers are walking off the job. And I thought, I don't know.
That's been the narrative, though. That's been the narrative. You've got that narrative coming from, you know, the Seattle Police Officers Guild. And there's a lot going on, right? You've got the Seattle City Council is in the midst of budget season. So they're deciding, you know, what if they're going to how much money they're going to give the SPD and what kind of how many new officers they're going to be able to hire, all of that. And then you've got the SPOG contract. The Seattle Police Officers contract is in need of a re-up. And that's a whole contentious process that took more than 4 years last time that they worked without a contract. So there's a lot going on there. A lot of talking heads. You've got, you know, the head of the police guild who's out saying that kind of thing. People, I think I just saw a headline from him just before I jumped on saying, get ready to defend yourself, people, because there's not enough cops. And that very well may be true. There's not enough cops, but that's largely because of the hundreds that left on their own before.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I'll try to get Mike Solon on again. I'm just looking at this headline from him on Fox. It says liberal Seattle leaders want to cancel police unions. And then he goes on to talk about what you just said, gross mismanagement, so on and so forth. So I'll get it straight from Mike Solon when I can get him on. It is it's an interesting turnout, Hannah Scott, and I'm surprised more and more the further we get into this how much it turned out to be basically a nothing burger. I hate using that expression, but I'll use it here. It's basically a massive nothing burger. And I'm not going to ask you to editorialize this on this, Hannah, but from my perspective as someone who works in punditry and who comments on the news and does analysis and all this other stuff. In a sense, it's almost like people were expecting this huge fallout. And after talking with you and Tim Robinson and a litany of other people, not so much. Not so much whatsoever. Looks like almost everybody is in compliance. I am going to have on, by the way, later on tonight, my very good friend, Dr. Z, and we're going to be talking about locally hospitals, why RNs, why nurses or other physicians would choose to not get the vaccine or why they would choose to dip out. So look out for that. Okay. So, Hannah Scott, you got anything before we get to Ed Troyer, or is that pretty much the end of the line?
I will just say for small businesses in Seattle that the Seattle Metro Chamber of Commerce just announced, along with this organization called the Business Health Trust, that they are going to be offering these. I believe it's a grant to give help the small business employers bring back their workers. You know, because you have to have vaccination verification starting in just a few days, I believe, for everything that you do in all of King County. And $1 million that they're going to put out to give $100 credits for every employee that gets vaccinated. So I thought that was going to be for each employee to get, but I believe it's for the business. So the business get the cash for everybody.
Great. So
I know there was another thing I wanted to mention to you that's a little separate from everything. We just got some new polling out from the Northwest Progressive Institute. They've been doing some polling on the Seattle election. This is the last of their polling that they're going to do. It's like 617 likely Seattle voters that they talked to. But there was a couple of highlights that I wanted to hit that were fairly interesting.
Sure.
One involving Nicole Thomas Kennedy. And the question that I know you had had her on to ask about, which was the tweets, the anti-cop tweets that came out during last year's protests. And what did she tell you? I think that they was
she was being sarcastic, and that she defends the right of any private citizen to be sarcastic on the internet.
Well, it's not resonating that well with the voters in this poll. She was ahead in this poll last check, and now it's Ann Davison leading 43% to 24% of that vote, which is a significant change in what had been happening. And it you know, lines up timeline wise with when the tweets became kind of the headline, and when our former governors, Christine Gregoire and Gary Locke, Democrats, came out and backed the Republican because they were so concerned about the current Democrat running Nicole Thomas Kennedy.
I will give you a hot take on Nicole Thomas Kennedy that will get me canceled, Hannah Scott. But I'll say, I will say it here on Cairo Nights. After speaking with both NTK and Ann Davison, I got the sense that, of course, I would prefer Ann Davison. Let me just throw that out there. Okay, so no one come at me calling me a crazy Marxist, communist, liberal, because I'm not. But I got the sense from NTK that NTK cares very much about the city. She just cares about it in a way that is potentially damaging and earth shattering. So,
right.
So many people out there are trying to castigate NTK as being an imbecile, or as if she is, it does not actually care about the city. I got the sense in talking to her both on and off air that she cares very much. Her policy prescriptions are just not in line with what I would prefer, and I would imagine many other people out there would prefer. So
I think she goes just a little too far to, I guess you'd call it, the left.
Exactly. Yeah.
A little too far to the left, right? And people are like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I don't know about any of this. So I think that might be what's happening. You know, it's certainly not a done deal, but it was a significant shift. A couple of other rundown of that polling. Bruce Harrell doubled going into the August primary, had an 8-point lead over his next closest opponent, which was Lorena Gonzalez. That's up to 16 points now, but only a small portion of undecided voters there. So Lorena Gonzalez will have her work cut out for her the last 2 weeks. Nikita Oliver, Sarah Nelson, I'm told, is going to be the race to watch, where you're going to have to see that this could have some fireworks. It's going to maybe come down to the very end, and it's a very, very competitive race. And then Teresa Mosqueda, who everybody kind of even forgets that she's running for reelection. It seemed like she had a smooth sailing going to reelection, no problem. And she might, but she's going to have to be a little more vocal. I think this poll had her opponent, who no one had ever heard of, he's like an engineer or an architect or something, Kenneth Wilson, who's running on a transportation platform with traffic issues and opening the West Seattle Bridge early, that kind of thing. That is resonating with people because people hate traffic here and they hate that the bridge is closed, and he's making up some significant ground. She's nowhere where she needs. She's not even close to what she needs to be as an incumbent. So that will be something to watch, because you could have an upset. You never know.
Hannah Scott, are you going to start throwing haymakers when you're moderating the debate? Are you going to be like, I've spoken to Jack Stein and he is here to shake things up on nightly radio? Are you going to, or can you name drop me? Is that something you'd be willing to do for me?
Oh, I could try. But you remember that that big, like, cane, sideways cane looking thing that used to take people off the stage at the Bonneville? I fear that might happen to me.
Well, all you got to do is just say, I work with the premier late night radio host within the tri-state area, comma, Jack Stein, and comma. I believe that he would like to ask Bruce Harrell, so on and so forth. You can insert any question in there. Just name drop me, and I'll be forever in your debt. And speaking of name dropping, by the way,
yes.
Ed Troyer had charges coming down, handed down to him today. He actually came out and said that he knew charges were coming since day one. And the fine details on this is that he's not. His charges are misdemeanors. One of them is lying to a civil servant, and then the other one is what?
False reporting.
False reporting.
Yeah, and both of those, I believe, connects to on the dispatch call that he made the night. This, of course, has to do with the incident back in January when Ed Troyer was kind of on his couch watching TV about 2 a.m. in the morning, and he saw somebody pulling in and out of driveways in his neighborhood that he felt was suspicious. So he thought it would be a good idea to jump in his vehicle and follow. It was not. That was a black newspaper delivery man on his normal route, and they got into kind of a exchange of words. And in the end, by the time the cops get there, these two are in their own vehicles facing off neck, you know, and facing each other, and their vehicles like 50 feet apart, just kind of at a standstill. But what Ed Troyer says to the private dispatch line he calls as the sheriff is, this guy threatened to kill me. He says it like four times. And that in turn led the dispatchers to believe that his life was threatened and on the line, and he was in trouble. And they put it as the highest priority call that goes out for if a cop's in trouble and if Mount Rainier explodes. So that's it. Literally, that's what it says in the court documents. So what? That's 40 some odd cops that come in the middle of the night, early in the morning, where you've got a black guy and a Pierce County sheriff, an elected sheriff, kind of in some sort of face off. That could have gone terribly wrong. So that's where you're going to get that false reporting charge. It was, you know, a risky deal.
Yeah, and I've gone over this so many times, you know, with other people, in which I have no idea why Ed Troyer would lie. I have no idea. And the Washington Black Lives Matter Alliance has come out, and they've demanded. Of course, they've come out of the woodwork.
They do that a lot.
They poke their head up and they say, "We demand the resignation of the criminally charged Sheriff Troyer." And I say,
they don't like him. There's a lot that goes back to that, though.
Yeah.
There's some history there. That's why. But and I don't know why he would lie. Look, I've known Ed a very long time. He is he used to be the public information officer for Pierce County Sheriffs. And he was always very, very straight, you know, straight up. And he and I covered a story that was a very tragic story for several years together. I know him well, and I couldn't imagine why he would be lying either. You know, in the phone call, I think there was some miscommunication, maybe misreading of some of what went on. But the fact that he said it four times on the call is a difficult point to get around, I think.
Well, Hannah Scott, thank you for your nuanced reporting, and thank you for following up with us this evening from yesterday's show, where we were anticipating further fallout. And yet, as I said earlier, basically a massive nothing burger as far as employees deciding to not turn in their paperwork and not turn in their exemptions. So, Hannah Scott, thank you again so much for coming on. Coming up next, Chris Sullivan is going to pop on for a couple of few, talking about what's going on northbound I-5. We'll be right back right after this.
The Best of Cairo Nights continues more. How's it going, everybody? This is Sugar Shane Peterson, the producer for Cairo Nights, and we've got another recent one here for you. This is from this past Monday. This is when Jack was joined by the Office of Public Affairs for Seattle School System Representative Tim Robinson, and he discussed how Seattle Public Schools are reporting a 99% compliance with the vaccination mandates.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. On the line right now is Tim Robinson, who's from the Office of Public Affairs for the Seattle Schools System. Thank you so much, Tim, for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it. I know that it's got to be kind of weird for you to get a phone call from a radio guy out of nowhere that's like, "Hey, come on my show and talk to me about vaccination rates amongst teachers." So I really do appreciate your time, and I really do appreciate you coming on.
Sure, no problem. Happy to help out, and I know it's something that's really interesting to a lot of folks because it's very topical.
Yeah, it is topical. And also, I think that for many people, they just kind of want to know, like, and this is my experience working in the news aspect of this. Many mm-hmm. people are very curious about the nuts and bolts of the numbers. They're very curious about how many people are vaccinated, how many people are not vaccinated, what's going on. Just as an example, we just had on one of our correspondents on this issue, Hannah Scott, and we were just going through the numbers, basically. How many officers from SPD, how many people from the fire department, how many people at the local level. Tomorrow we're going to go over people at the state level. And one of the things that I've tried to avoid is pulling too much of a narrative from the data. I've really tried to avoid editorializing or making a vast narrative over the vaccination rates from our public employees, because I feel like that's... I feel like it's unfair for me to do for my audience. It feels like I'm almost right. doing them a disservice. So you sent us a release. Do you want to go over the details with the vaccine mandate response, all the data that you have pulled from the teachers?
Well, sure, yeah. I guess the headline is it's fantastic news. So Seattle Public Schools, you know, we have, let's say, around 12,000-13,000 employees, but that's when you add in the hourly and the seasonal folks who, you know, in many respects, some of them not impacted by this. It's our regular full-time employees that we're talking about here, and that number is 7,283, which is a large number. So the headline is good news, 99% vaccination rate for Seattle Public Schools. Most people, and it's understandable, parents, families, want to know, what about my teacher? What about the person who teaches my student? So they are over 99% vaccination rate. And, you know, again, these numbers are finalized today because today is the day that the vaccination mandate that the governor put down is due. And so we are reporting these numbers to the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction and just letting them know that overall, Seattle Public Schools has a 99% vaccination rate. Our teachers, they're over 99% compliance. 100% of our principals are compliant. 99% of our management staff is compliant. So it's just really good news is what I would call it. And there are a handful of employees who are underway in getting their vaccinations. They may have gotten their first and they're needing to get their second. So they are on leave. They're taking leave in order to complete their vaccination process in the coming days. So there's that. And then finally, as you know, people can seek an exemption either on religious grounds or medical grounds. And of that, Seattle Public Schools gave 205 employees exemptions for either medical or religious. So that's kind of the overview of where we're standing with vaccination rates.
Yeah, and I find it amazing because a lot of the people that I have been talking to, I want to say over this last 3 weeks, you know, people send my show emails and they're very, I'm going to be very delicate here, but they're very intense about their feelings around the vaccine mandate. So, and I can't always verify it. I can't always clarify it, but I'll get emails from people that say, Jack Stein, I'm a employee of so-and-so and such, and I will never be put in a position where I have to get the vaccine. And just from what I've seen today, I see pretty much across the board, whether it's SPD or the fire department, or even now from the data that you've pulled, teachers, most people by and large, pretty compliant, right? And I don't know if you have this information. Was there a tremendous amount of pushback from people within the school districts? Was there a tremendous amount of upheaval, or was it just kind of business as usual, go along to get along type behavior?
Well, I think you'll have to just take that final number, that 99%, to answer that no, they're not pushed back. Now, that right. said, you know, in the beginning, there may have been questions. There may have been, you know, folks articulating some of that passion here and there. There was certainly concern about, you know, unions saying, well, wait a minute, I'm a member of a union, you know, are we going to have to? And other folks saying, well, I don't even work for the district, but, you know, I drive a bus or I'm a regular volunteer in the school. Do we have to? So early on, there were expressions that, you know, could have been taken as pushed back a little bit. But it was more, I think, not pushed back, but it was just raising some legitimate, great questions, saying, hold on, where are we with this? And those were worked out. You know, the district worked with the Seattle Education Association, the teachers union, on this type of thing. And so, you know, we're very careful about it, very deliberate about it. And I think the thing is, you know, the big overview, overarching answer to your question is that we live in a county, you know, in a city and in an area of a state that has a really high vaccination rate. So I think that what we've experienced at Seattle Public Schools certainly just falls right along in line with the way that this community approaches vaccinations.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and I find it really just fascinating that almost everybody that I know has been vaccinated. I've been vaccinated, and to your point about, you know, people having questions, when I initially heard about, you know, the COVID-19 vaccines, I was that guy, and it's kind of stereotypical, but I was that guy where I was thinking, well, I'm 33. At the time I was 33. And I said, I don't need to go out and get the vaccine. And I was very hesitant about it. And I had questions as well. And I go and I complain to my doctor friend, Dr. Z, who's a regular on my show. And I said, Dr. Z, I don't want to get the vaccine. And we talked about it. You know, he just talked to me about it like I was a regular guy and we were friends and he was my doctor and he explained to me all the ins and outs of it. And I made the decision to go out and get the J&J vaccine because I felt like that was best for me. And my at least this is a sense that I get from the community, at least in like King County, is that most people pretty much did the same thing. Is it most people said, like, you know, it's not this big life or death thing for me. I refuse to get the vaccine. That was not the case, even though there were maybe some more outliers out there who felt that way. The majority of people, by and large, I think, and I think to your point, like all the numbers bear this out. Majority of people, by and large, I think came to that same conclusion. And I have to say, kind of to editorialize this a little bit and to kind of personalize it, I'm really quite proud to live in a community where people decided to make that choice. And conversely, you know, if people didn't want to make that choice, that's fine for them as well. I don't want to say that it's like, absolutely someone's like a moral imperative to get it. But I find it, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, I think it's a positive indicator, despite the way that people might feel about the mandates and this, despite the way that people might feel about Jenny Durkin or Jay Inslee or whatever it is. I think it just goes to show how many people out there were saying, you know what, I'm going to make an informed medical decision for me and for my family. And I'm really quite proud to live in a community that had that response to it. So, Tim Robinson, thank you so much for coming on and breaking down the numbers for us. I really do appreciate it. Tim Robinson is the media relations specialist for Seattle Public Schools. And again, we appreciate you coming on and breaking it down for us.
Sure. Yeah, sure, Jack. Happy to help out.
All right, we will take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to do a little bit of good news with my very good friend, Shane Peterson. We'll be right back after this.
More Best of Cairo Nights just around the bend. Welcome back to the Best of Cairo Nights. This is producer Sugar Shane Peterson. And we got one back from September 3rd. This was a story about Jack, you know, looking like a weirdo. But, you know, what's new?
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Shane Peterson, do you ever feel like a creep around other people? Do you ever feel like a creeper when you're doing stuff?
Every single day of my life, Jack.
Good. So maybe you can relate to this. So I was walking Bear today, and Bear got a haircut that's too short. So we got him a bunch of clothes, right? Because we don't want him to get cold, and we don't want him to feel out of sorts. We want him to feel comfortable when he's around other people. So we got him a little hoodie, got him a little denim jacket, got him, you know, all kinds of fun stuff for him to put on, like little dog clothes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So do you plan on putting any cool band patches on that jean?
Yeah.
Jacket?
So Sarah got a Dio patch, and
nice.
Then she got a Sublime patch,
nice.
Like the old the Drug Son patch. And so we got a bunch of, like, you know, it's just like a little dog who wears clothes is cute, right?
Yeah, that's adorable.
So close to my house or in the neighborhood in the vicinity around my house is a school. And as you know, Sugar Shane Peterson School is back in session. Yeah.
Ah, yes, it is.
So I am walking Blue Bear past this school and there's a bunch of little kids there and they are elated to see Boo Bear in his little clothes. So I'm walking past the school. I'm walking past like the playground of the school. And like, I don't want to oversell it, but probably like 10 to 15 kids run up to the fence. Oh my God. Look at your little dog. Oh my God. And then all these little kids are like, can we pet your dog? Can we pet your dog? And me being me, pretty unassuming, I'm like, yeah, sure. I don't care. You guys can pet my dog. So I take Bear over there. And now I'm standing at the fence line with the little kids on the other side of the fence, and
ooh,
they're reaching through the fence.
Not a good look.
Yeah. And so this is what I'm wearing, Shane. Are you ready for this? I am wearing black pants,
mm-hmm,
dark blue shirt, sunglasses,
okay,
sunglasses, black hat, black Vans. So from a distance, it looks like a black, like a guy in all black. Talking to these kids through this fence, right?
With a very small dog wearing a denim jacket.
So instantly I go, it like the reality of the circumstance hits me, and I go, oh no, this is like a, if you were to just drive past that scene, am I off base about this, Shane, or am I right? If someone was to drive past that scene, I look like a weirdo, right?
I look
like a creep.
Yeah, no, if I was driving by in my work truck and I drove by and saw you doing that, Jack, I would go, what is this guy up to?
Yeah.
I would be like, you know, I would be like, those black jeans are a little too tight to be hanging around with some of those kids. And why does he have that dog?
Yeah. And then on top of that, I've got full sleeve tattoos. So I look like a death row inmate who was just pardoned, right? So I'm like walking around. And so it hits me out of nowhere. So then I go, I got to get out of here before somebody notices something, right? So as I'm walking away from the kids, I'm like, okay, bye, little kids. Bye, little kids. I see a what looks to be like a pocket knife in the brush by these kids, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like I have a memory of a goldfish, and I'm like, oh, I should pick this up and throw this away so that little kids don't find it. And when I pick it up, Shane, it was one of those, you know the tool company Milwaukee?
Yeah.
So you know those box cutter pocket knives that they have?
Yeah, those are gnarly. I have one.
Right. So this thing was sitting there right next to the school. And so I pick it up and I open it and I go, oh, no, no little kid should have this. So now what it looks like, Shane, is a guy with full sleeve tattoos in all black and a little Pomeranian opening up a knife that is a box cutter within 5 feet of these little children. And I just was like, I have to get out of here. So I close the thing. I walk away from the school. I throw the thing away. I just throw it right in the trash. I'm like, I'm not keeping this. It might have been used to harm somebody. It might have been used to rob somebody. I'm throwing it away. So I throw it away. And I was just filled with shame, Shane, all the way back to my home. I was just filled with shame and regret that I try to be a good person and let little kids look at my dog.
Well, I don't think that you should beat yourself up about it. Here's the thing, Jack. Here's how you should tell yourself and how you should, you know, make yourself feel better. Just knowing the fact that you had that feeling when it was happening. When you came to the realization of what was happening, you realized, oh, wow, I look like this. It would be really bad if you would have thought nothing of it and maybe have kept the knife and been like, hey, kids, catch, and tossed it over the fence. Then I would go back and I would, you know, walk back to my place and I'd feel pretty bad too. But you did the right thing. You know, you got a cute dog. when you got a cute dog, you know, people are going to want to come up and, you know, pet it, even if it's not even a cute dog, you know, even if it's an ugly dog. If people have dogs, people are going to go one up and talk about them and pet them because people are weird. So, yeah. I mean, I think you did the right thing. I think you probably made a few kids' little days. And, you know, I think Boo Bear probably, did Boo Bear like the attention? That's the main question.
Oh, he loves, that's the thing is, he's such a sweet dog that he loves the attention and he doesn't nip and he doesn't bite and he sits and all these little kids are like, wee! And they're all petting him and they're all giggling and they're having a great time. And I'm there just looking like sullen and depressed. And I'm like, yeah, he's great. And they're like, how old is he? And I'm like, he's like 15. And they're like, 15! I'm not 15! All the, you know, they're like little kids. So they get really excited about stuff like that. And I was just like, it hit me out of nowhere.
And then somebody walks over. They're like, are you telling these kids that you're 15?
That's what it felt like, Shane. Like, I felt like a total creep, and I felt like a total weirdo. So, yeah. And here's the other thing. Can you imagine one of those little kids, their mom comes to pick them up from school, and the mom's like, so what happened at school today? And the little kid is like, this man came up to us with his little dog, and he let us pet his dog, and then he took out a pocket knife. Like, can you imagine what that mom would say about him?
It would be an interesting letter sent home to all the kids at school. Hey, yeah. If you see a guy with full sleeve tattoos, sunglasses, and too tight of black pants with a Pomeranian, just be wary.
All right, well, we got to take a really quick break. When we get back, Ashley Scontriano is going to be coming on, and we're going to be talking about all the COVID restrictions in Jefferson County and all over the place. So stick around for my very good friend Ashley Scontriano right after this.